from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For more than 10 years now, the charter school movement has been picking up steam. What started in a handful of states is now a nationwide phenomenon, attracting educators, parents, and politicians looking for an alternative to struggling public schools and government bureaucracy. The idea is simple. Let local groups use public funds to start their own schools, charter schools. Freed from the regulations that steer traditional public schools, the thinking goes, communities will be able to devise innovative curricula tailored to the needs of their own kids. Away from the crowded warehouses of the public system, teachers will thrive, parents will get involved, and students will flourish. That is the theory. But according to a new national comparison of test scores for children in charter schools and regular public schools, the first of its kind, the numbers tell a different story. The U.S. Department of Education findings show that in almost every racial, economic, and geographic category, fourth graders in traditional public schools have outperformed fourth graders in charter schools. The study has rattled charter school proponents and given fresh ammunition to public school defenders. Tonight on Point, the state of charter schools, what's working and what's not. What do you make of charter schools scoring below public schools in a national survey? Do charter school defenders have a problem here? Or is this just an early snapshot on the way to greater glory? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York is New York Times national education correspondent Diana Jean Shemmo, whose article on the Education Department's findings on charter schools appeared in today's Times. Diana Jean Shemmo, thanks for joining us.
Good evening.
So can you tell us exactly what was in these numbers?
Well, what the numbers show is that when you look at charter schools as a whole, students in the charter schools are performing about a half a year behind those in the public schools at the fourth grade level in reading and math. They did some comparisons at the eighth grade level, but the sample in the charter schools there was not large enough to make any sort of reliable national comparison. So I would kind of avoid going there. But focusing on the fourth grade results, we see that the charter schools are sort of trailing behind the public schools. Now, some of that may have to do with who attends charter schools, which is what the supporters say, and there is some truth to that argument. But even when you look at a breakdown by where the schools are located, mm-hmm. central cities, or if you look at income, who is eligible for free and reduced lunches, you see the same sort of effect. When you look at the racial breakdown, it's less pronounced. The charter schools are still not doing as well, but it's not a statistically significant difference.
Do you mean in minority communities? Is that what you're saying?
In African American and Hispanic communities, mm-hmm. but they are still behind. And if you look at it in terms of the achievement levels, what's the percentage of students reaching what the NAEP the National Assessment calls basic or below basic, there you do see a larger percentage of students in the charter schools that haven't even reached the basic level of performance.
Diana, people are going to want to parse these numbers very carefully. Can you explain exactly how this survey was done?
Sure. NAEP is actually a test that's given in this one was given February 2003.
This is the National Assessment of Educational Progress. This is the sort of the big nation's report card, as you describe it.
Exactly. And some people don't like the NAEP, but for many people it's considered the gold standard because it is given across the country. It's really the only national exam that we have. And it's not sort of tailored to individual state standards. It's the same for everybody. So
February 2003, not so long ago, and who was measured? How many schools? How many students were pulled in their net of survey?
For the charter schools, they were looking at the fourth grade level, I believe 9,200 students, 167 schools. They looked at 3,200 students or so at the, you know, I think I'm wrong about that. I think it was 6,000 at the fourth grade level and 3,200 at the eighth grade level. So you had a bigger sample at the fourth grade level, and they were at 167 schools, which the folks over at the National Assessment say is a nationally representative sample of charter schools.
So big enough to be a pretty significant sampling, and you turned to educators and found them describing this as dismaying, really important numbers, even supporters of charter schools saying there's a problem here, that maybe a need for more tough love at these schools, more accountability.
Right, exactly. I think that most people were aware that charter schools, there have been sort of small local studies that already showed us that on test scores, charter schools are frequently not doing as well. But these were local studies. I think people were sort of surprised that at the national level, this was showing up on the NAEP, on the national assessment. And it is kind of serving, I think, more so to the people who are, I would say, either against charter schools or who are kind of disinterested observers in the sense that they don't feel like they have a pony in the race. For them, it's really particularly dismaying. For the proponents of charter schools, I've seen some stuff that they've put out today, which they seem to be saying, hey, this is just a snapshot, and which is what they said beforehand, but they seem to be more saying that the results are purely a reflection of the fact that charter schools can serve more sort of troubled communities, that mm-hmm. the kids who go to them may have been in the most sort of dire straits at the schools they left. I think they may have some argument on that from other quarters, but they do have a strong supporter in the White House. And, you know, Secretary of Education Page has issued a statement today essentially saying that charter schools are dealing with this, you know, diverse population, and that explains the sort of performance that we're seeing, and he didn't seem particularly troubled by it, I have to say.
Still, this isn't the kind of expectations that have been raised by the language around charter schools. The whole idea was to do better than public schools, and it's now a significant number. What, something like 88,000 public schools in the U.S., 3,000 charter schools now, more than 600,000 students. And yet, for all that, Diana, these numbers, when this survey material was generally poured out last fall, these numbers were not. In fact, they seem to have been hidden almost with political intent. Can you describe what happened there for us?
Yeah, what happened was in November, under the No Child Left Behind, every 6 months after the students take the national assessment, the results, the state-by-state results, are supposed to be released under law. So the folks over at the national assessment do have to hustle and hurry up to get that data out. They say that it was just a function of that sort of the enormous amount of data that they had to put out that they didn't highlight in their report the fact that, hey, they had some results from this pilot study, which was actually much awaited. That said, however, they have never issued any sort of a public statement. They've never even mentioned that this is publicly available. And
it took a private group to go in and painstakingly dig the numbers out and put them together. But they're not disputing the numbers now that they're out there.
No, they haven't. There is no dispute with the numbers. It's the Department of Ed's own numbers, so there is really not much room for disputing the numbers. What they are disputing is the analysis. They have said that the scores really don't tell you anything. Almost what they're saying is you really need a kind of further breakdown to say, well, how are the schools governed? Who are the students in them? How long have they been in existence? And essentially to parse the numbers thinly enough so that you can see, well, where are we seeing this poor performance, and is it attributable to some specific feature?
Well, maybe
to charter
so.
Schools generally.
Right, but on the other hand, charter schools are no longer born yesterday, and they're central to President Bush's No Child Left Behind program. Diana Jean Shemma, we appreciate your reporting on this. I hope you'll stick with us as we dig further into this.
Sure.
I want to welcome into our conversation now from Wellfleet, Massachusetts, Richard Rothstein. He's research associate at the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., author of Class and Schools. Richard Rothstein, thanks for joining us tonight.
Good evening.
And with me in the studio, Meg Campbell, founder and head of school at Codman Academy, a charter high school in Dorchester, Massachusetts. Meg Campbell, thank you for being with me today.
Thanks for inviting me.
So, Meg, first to you. I'm sure you saw the story this morning and these numbers. Headline is, bad report card for charter schools. Is it wake up and smell the coffee time here? Is this something that charter school proponents and those involved in it every day, like yourself, need to be worried about, need to be responding to?
Well, I'd have to say I wasn't surprised. I think those of us on the ground know that there are thousands of charter schools in varying degrees and all different abilities. I think what's heartening is that the charter schools, unlike the district schools, have in place a mechanism for closure.
And so the closure meaning what?
If they don't, they have a charter. You have a 5-year charter, and if it does not get renewed based on your performance, you are closed. You're out of business. And that's something that the district schools don't have in place. And so I think the good news is that, okay, those schools that are not performing for whatever reason need to be held. Their time is up, and they need to be held accountable and to be closed.
But a decade in here, after a lot of schools have been opened, and many more open all the time. I mean, charter schools are increasing in number exponentially and expected to continue to do that. If the average still comes out behind public schools, isn't that a problem?
Well, I think it also, again, looking at the data, there's you know, I have some kind of counter data from the Center for Education Reform in terms of looking at the NAEP data in terms of the context of particular states. Mm-hmm. I mean, they point out that the fourth grade students in Arizona, California, and Colorado outperform traditional public school students in the reading, and over one third of students in charter schools are in either California or Arizona.
And yet, these are national numbers that we've just heard about.
The closest thing to a charter school, I mean, in terms of a metaphor would be if you took all small businesses and, you know, the high failure rate of small businesses. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a social entrepreneur endeavor, and there's a wide range of people running these schools. Not all are, you know, clearly are doing a great job.
And yet in small business, it's somebody's cash at stake. In schools, it's our kids. Meg Campbell, stand by. We'll come back to this, but I want to get Richard Rothstein in here. Richard, what did you make of these numbers this morning? Do we have a problem here with the charter school movement or just a blip on the radar screen?
Well, I think it's important to step back for a minute and remember that there's a theory behind these charter schools. The idea of charter schools is that the reason that student performance is unsatisfactory in America today is because public schools are overburdened with regulations that teachers' unions prevent the public school administrators from taking the right initiatives, that there are too many regulations controlling the curriculum and class size and all the other things in public schools. And if only we release public schools from these burdensome regulations, there'd be this burst of creativity, and results would show that schools would suddenly begin to perform at much higher levels than they did before.
That's clearly been the message, the magic elixir kind of, at least at the political level, that's been the message.
That's the motivation of charter schools. That's the theory behind them. Now, what these data show, and these are not the first data like this, what these data show, what they should show, is that maybe the theory is wrong. Maybe the reason the performance of students is lower than we'd like it to be is not because of burdensome regulations and teachers' unions and school district administrators who are telling principals what to do. Maybe there are other reasons for low performance that we ought to look at. And I think that's the message that we should be taking from these data, not quibbling over whether if you parse the numbers a little differently, you might get a tiny bit different result. We've had lots of studies now of charter schools and even voucher schools, where we find that once you control for student characteristics, there's no difference. I'm surprised, actually, that the charter schools did so much more poorly than public schools. I would expect them to do about the same.
So you're saying that public schools shouldn't be patting themselves on the back here. We've got problems in both schools that maybe neither format is addressing.
Well, what I would argue is that if the theory of charter schools is wrong, and I think that these data show that they are, that the reason that schools perform poorly is not because of burdensome regulations and bureaucracy, the reason that public schools perform poorly and the charter schools perform poorly is primarily because of the social conditions that low-income and minority students are coming to school from.
Hold that thought, Richard Rothstein, Meg Campbell, Diana Jean Shemo. We've got to take a short break. We'll be right back. We're talking tonight about a tough new report card on charter schools showing them lagging behind public schools. What do you make of charter schools scoring below public schools in this national survey? Do these new scores throw the charter school movement into doubt, or is this just an early days snapshot on the way to greater glory? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking tonight about a tough new report card on America's charter schools, showing them lagging behind traditional public schools. After all the hubbub, what do you think? Are public schools redeemed by these federal numbers? Is anyone redeemed when the proficiency rate in both kinds of schools is so low? What's your experience of charter schools? Were they overhyped, or are they just getting warmed up? Is this the way, after all? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight by Richard Rothstein, research associate at the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., by Diana Jean Shemo, the national education correspondent for The New York Times. She broke the story this morning in The Times. And by Meg Campbell, founder and head of school at Codman Academy, a charter high school in Dorchester, Massachusetts. Diana, let me put the question to you, jumping off what Richard Rothstein just said. He said, you know, neither doing really scratching the itch here. You've got social conditions hitting the poor that are setting them up for failure on either track. And to look at these numbers, as you said, what these numbers show is that charter schools, in this snapshot of fourth grade performance, their students were about half a year behind public schools. But as you said, to put it another way, only 25% of fourth graders attending charters were proficient in reading and math. Only 30% were proficient in reading and 32% in math at traditional public schools. Neither set of numbers looks too great.
No, I think that's true. I actually agree with Richard. I think that what we're seeing here is sort of a larger failure to address the issues that that kids bring to school and that are getting in the way of their learning. And I don't really see that charter schools are a kind of a magical bullet to a silver bullet to kind of remedy that. When you look at these scores, if you break them down even further, because what you just referred to is a national, that includes suburban schools, that includes, you know, all kinds of schools. But
right,
if you break them down further to look at what's going on in cities, I think there you have a very kind of a much worse picture even yet. So I think you're right. It's kind of I mean, if you look at, for example, the percentage of students at or above proficient in the central cities, just in the urban areas,
okay,
there for charter schools you're looking at 16% versus 24% in public schools. So it's even more sort of despairing, you know, these numbers.
I'm sure there are reasons for that. There's a lot to dig into here, but I want to begin to bring our callers in. A lot want to join us. Brian is calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I worked in Beloit, Wisconsin, in their school district for 3 years.
Okay.
And they're basically looking at the fact that they have a high poverty rate. They have a high socioeconomic disability special ed rate. So they created a charter school within a middle school on the eastern side of town. And instead of looking at it as how can we help children and learn, the parents took over and said, we want our kids, those coming from rich families, to have their own programs so that way they're not in a regular ed classroom with the rest of the disenfranchised. So it basically became, we're going to create a charter school to have separation.
And to separate rich from poor in the same community, two
you
parts
got
of it.
You got it. And no one's willing to step up and actually say no to this. And so basically, with that charter school, rather than trying to help the kids that are not able to have that many successes, they're going only at the top 1% that have a good chance of making it.
But you would think, Brian, that that would produce numbers. Of course, that's one example, not national, but that would produce higher numbers than public school.
Exactly. But unfortunately, that school still doesn't have the high numbers that they wanted, so they're now on the needs improved list. Now, to look at MPS, where I currently work at as a pseudo-administrator.
In Milwaukee schools, yeah.
In Milwaukee. They have many different charter schools. And the problem that they're looking at now is the fact that they have open enrollment. People can go in and out as much as they want. But because there's such a transition of student populations going in and out and no stability, there's no true way to track the kids and see if there are improvements going on. So if it could become stable and if there could be a baseline to look at statistically to see if they could go ahead and create improvement, have the staff there rather than closing down, helping the families out.
Right.
There's just no way of having it work. So I think it goes both ways. You need to create a system to where charter schools could have a chance to succeed. And right now, in many urban settings, it just doesn't happen.
Brian, thanks for your call from Milwaukee. Meg Campbell, join us here. You must have a million thoughts. You're up to your hips in this every day. First, let's look at this issue of who's coming in to the charter schools. The argument is made that the charter schools get the tougher cases because they're people who may have come out of failing schools, particularly in the inner city. On the other hand, our caller Brian says he's seen the example where it works the other way, where you've got affluent families setting up a charter school to separate their kids from children with difficulties, socioeconomic and otherwise. Do you see a different profile? Can you generalize about the profile of who's coming into charter schools?
Well, I think there's over 600,000 students, and that's a lot of families' dreams at stake there in terms of choosing to go to charter schools, and I think they probably go for lots of different reasons. But my own experience working in an urban neighborhood is that we attract a higher percentage of students with special needs and a higher percentage of students of color and low income than the Boston Public Schools at large. We situated our school in a economically challenged neighborhood in order to create a college preparatory open enrollment school, mm-hmm. which is at this time is outperforming our district counterparts. If it weren't, we ought to be shut down. I think that I agree with both of the other speakers in terms of, I certainly don't think I run a charter school. It is not a magic bullet. Public financing of charter schools should not be on property taxes in this country. It's just, to me, immoral.
Of charter schools or of any public schools?
Any public education. The fact that we have public education is a function of where you were born.
So lower income, lower value communities in real estate terms have lower funds for their education.
Yes. But I'm an educator, and what I can do with my life and my profession, having served in the Boston Public Schools and in the Chelsea Public Schools as an administrator and an educator and as a Boston Public School parent and a Dorchester resident for over 20 years, I won't be living forever. I felt the most effective way to teach and to reach families and children was to start a charter school.
So you're out there fighting the fire. You maybe can't change all the social conditions overnight, but you're doing what you can. But you must be in the loop where you hear a lot about charter schools right across the country. And they're manifestly here are not all doing as well as yours in beating the public schools that these kids have come from. So I would
hold accountable the chartering agency. They should have been too lenient in terms of rechartering. That's number one.
And rechartering if they haven't performed,
they ought to be shut.
But they get 5 years of testing time, right?
Yes, but I'm sure that many of these schools that are not working have been, too easily renewed.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a person in the charter movement that I think it strengthens our movement to have schools close because it holds, it improves the industry, so to speak, the field, to make all of us stronger. So I think they shouldn't,
If it's not working, get rid of it.
But I think we should also be holding accountable. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. The data nationally, whichever school, there are few, high-performing schools that are serving low-income students. That's a bigger national problem. Charter schools, in my view, are one piece of the puzzle. They're not the whole thing, but they are for those over 600,000 families and many, many more on the wait list. I mean, every day I get families begging to get into our school.
Because they don't like where they are. They want to get somewhere better, but that somewhere better, depending on the charter school, may not be better, these numbers say at least. Scott's calling from Danville, Kentucky. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you, John?
Great, thanks.
Good. Well, I taught for 2 years in a charter school. And I now teach and have taught for several years in a public school.
Okay.
And really saw no difference. The charter school got the same economic-based child that the public schools. I've taught in inner city, and I've taught in rural area. The creativity that went on in both schools was the same by the teachers. The teachers were excellent teachers, but just because it was a charter school didn't mean they had more materials or more things for them to prepare the students.
And you didn't feel the faculty and the parents more motivated, more incented to do a better job?
Well, no, I really didn't. I mean, that it was over our head that we could be closed if we didn't do our job. I didn't teach long enough to see whether it happened or not. I moved out of the area.
Right.
But the charter school I worked for, test scores were still low. We still dealt with the same issues of kids coming in with all kinds of baggage from outside that prevented them from learning. Parents who just kind of dropped them off the door expecting this charter school to fix their kid or their student.
Right, the pixie dust of the charter school.
The teamwork was the same at the charter school as it was in the public school. Parents and teachers worked pretty much the same way.
Yeah, so it looked like familiar terrain to you. Scott, we've got the picture. Thanks for calling in with that. Richard Rothstein, we take your point, and we don't want to ignore it at all, that the number one issue here may be the social context, the larger social economic context around the schools, and yet people are doing what they can. Here's a teacher in Kentucky saying, I've worked both sides of the street, and I couldn't see a difference. What do you know about that?
Well, I think that's accurate from what I've seen. I did a study several years ago in which we visited both public and private schools in similar neighborhoods and found them to be almost identical for their neighborhoods. There was a big difference between schools in affluent neighborhoods and low-income neighborhoods, but when you compared public and private schools in low-income neighborhoods or public and private schools in high-income neighborhoods, those seemed very similar. So I think he's absolutely right about that. If I may, I'd like to address for a second this notion of closing charter schools if they don't perform, because this is part of the theory of charter schools, and I think Ms. Campbell is right in citing it. The problem is that if these data are to be believed, the national data are to be believed, and of course they're not disaggregated by school, but you would think that probably most charter schools should be closed if we were going to hold them accountable for their performance. The problem is that the idea of charter schools is they would be closed if they didn't meet the high goals that they set for themselves, but that has not been enforced anywhere in the country. The charter schools that have been closed in the last 10 years have almost always been closed because of financial irregularities, almost never because of low student performance.
Okay. That's pretty amazing. Some big financial irregularities or trouble I just saw a couple of days ago in California. California's largest charter school operator has shut down at least 60 campuses with a new investigation going on into their financial and academic practices. That brings me back, Diana Jean Shemo, to the word we heard from Milwaukee, which was instability. Richard Rothstein says they're supposed to be shut down, but they're not being. Our Milwaukee caller says, when they are shut down, you've got people coming in and out of schools disappearing. Is instability a factor here for both public and charter schools because of the existence of charter schools?
I think it's a factor. I'm not sure if it's because of the existence of charter schools. Charter schools enter the mix, though, so they do occupy a place. And so suddenly, when you have something like a charter school operator that's not operating by the books in California that exits suddenly, they're stuck with 10,000 kids who basically have no place to call, home when September comes and it's time to start school.
Just a couple of weeks before school should begin.
Exactly. So I think that kind of, it does in that sense heighten the instability because you can't just sort of shut a school. It's so easy to say, but then suddenly you have all of these kids who basically have no place to go, and you will, I think, see this become much more of a problem in coming years because No Child Left Behind holds out charter schools as one of the options for a failing school, a chronically failing school. This is after 5 or 6 years.
Right.
And so they're slated to become a bigger part of the mix. But I don't really see – I think Richard's right about that. You don't really see very many schools closing. Most people can name a few states, Arizona, California, Texas, where you have seen sort of these I would say significant numbers closing because of these financial irregularities. But very often they don't close. They just kind of continue on. and that can be a problem too, despite the instability.
Meg Campbell, let me put that to you. Are we just being stodgy here, or is there an issue with instability that comes around the charter school dynamic? If you've got, essentially it puts the sword hanging over everyone's head, right? The public schools have to perform, the charter schools have to perform, or they're closed, and that means students have to move. Does the advantage of the charter school offset the shakeup, the instability of that kind of now you're in, now you're out, now you're up, now you're down?
Well, two things. First, I think it's very, very important to underscore that charter schools are public schools. So we have public charter schools and we have public district schools. And
we've been calling traditional public schools.
Right. And I think that let's go back to the families and the parents and their deep aspirations for opportunity, educational opportunity. I think that's probably what I've learned the most from having the privilege of running Cottman Academy Charter Public School, is the deep, deep aspiration of low-income parents of color for their children to go to get the best education possible. I would invite Mr. Rothstein and Ms. Shimo to come to my school. My school is quite different than the school a block away. Our kids go 6 days a week. They go 9 to 5. They go on Saturdays. We have the highest attendance of any high school in the city.
And you have the latitude to do all that because you're a charter school.
I can start at 9 in the morning, whereas when I worked in the Boston Public Schools and tried to get the schools to start later, because that's what the research shows adolescents need, couldn't do it. You know, it was just impossible to move that battleship. So I think the charter public schools are best seen as the R&D division of public education. Not everything works. You know, we're fortunate. We're an expeditionary learning outward bound school. We have a model. We have a philosophy, a well-tested program. But, you know, yes, some people, but not every school has that. And in terms of closing the schools, that should be done in a thoughtful manner, of course. But to parents, I mean, when we opened our doors, and we didn't even have a building to begin with, and then we found a home with the Cobham Square Health Center. Parents are so desperate for options and for choices.
They want that education
they
for the kids.
That.
And they want it.
They want
ASAP.
Their kids to go to college. They want. They're willing to have the kids go 6 days a week.
So bring it on, Richard Rothstein. How about it? Charter schools is the R&D sort of leading edge of the greater public school public education effort.
Well, I don't buy it. I'm sure that Ms. Campbell School is a wonderful school. There are some wonderful charter schools. There are also wonderful public schools. There are bad charter schools and there are bad public schools. There's a range of schools in both categories. I don't think consistently, if you visit schools, you'll find that charter schools are consistently better than public schools, or the public schools are consistently better than charter schools. What you will find is that when you get children coming to school who are in ill health, who don't have stable housing, who don't have adequate parenting support, they're going to do poorly whether they're in public schools or in charter schools. And that's the kind of issue that we're refusing to address in public policy today, and hoping to solve all the problems simply by deregulating schools. And it's not going to work.
And a lot more charter schools coming down the pipeline with No Child Left Behind, as conceived now. We have to take a short break. We'll come back. We're talking about a tough new report card on charter schools. A lot of you waiting to chime in, I know. We'll get to you just after the break. New numbers showing charter schools lagging behind public schools. Why do you think the Bush Education Department was so quiet, almost secretive about these new numbers? Are charter schools generally meeting the reality test? Are they delivering? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about a tough new report card on charter schools. New survey, national survey by the U.S. Department of Education, showing charter schools lagging behind public schools in fourth grade results. You can join the conversation. What do you make of charter schools scoring below traditional public schools in this national survey? What's your experience personally of charter schools? And should these numbers change the allocation of education resources between charter and non-charter schools? We're at 1-800-423-8255 tonight. That's 1-800-423-8255. 4-2-3-TALK. My guest tonight, Meg Campbell, founder and head of school at Codman Academy, a charter high school in Dorchester, Massachusetts. New York Times national education correspondent Diana Jean Shemo is with us, and Richard Rothstein, research associate at the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. Right now, Amanda is calling from Platteville, Wisconsin. Hi, Amanda. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Well, for starters, I would say I wasn't at all surprised by the results. We were, my son was in an elementary school, highly rated elementary school, public school in Princeton, New Jersey.
Okay.
And in third grade, we decided to try the charter school that had been in existence for about 2 years because we felt, well, he needed challenges, and we'd heard wonderful things about how rigorous the curriculum was, and we thought, okay, this might be the wonderful opportunity we've been looking for. He'd be there through eighth grade.
Sure.
We had a dismal experience. It's hard to really pinpoint just where to start. For one, the quality of the teachers I found far inferior to what we'd had in the public schools. What I'd heard from principals who had not hired some of the teachers that were then hired at the charter school was they just weren't experienced enough. Some had been formerly teaching at the private schools and just hadn't worked out. So the teacher's experience level was
lower. So you didn't like the experience level. And what the numbers show, something like 48% of teachers in the average charter school don't have a teaching certificate, I read, compared with 9% in the average public school.
Even in Princeton, where you would have thought that they would have had, there was one teacher who graduated from Princeton University who was outstanding, but the others were poor.
And yet here you are in Princeton, New Jersey. You'd have a lot of people pushing for a great school. You'd think there'd be one. Why not?
The other part of it, I believe, was there was a very strong group who founded the school who had complete ownership, were so focused on presenting their school, focused on the numbers. I mean, it was clearly a case where they were teaching to the tests. I was just appalled when I went for my first conference and was told by the inexperienced teacher, who didn't even seem to know my son. I mean, he was a bright, bright child. We will teach this because it will be on the test.
And that's not what you were looking for.
Not at all. I was looking for creativity, challenges. My son was so bored. He got headaches. It was quite bad.
So you went over to the charter side, and it didn't work for you. Amanda, thanks for calling in with that. Meg Campbell, you must hear all kinds of responses from families, students that take the plunge. Here's one that didn't work out. As you listen to this story, what's going through your mind as a charter school principal yourself?
Well, I'm sorry they didn't have a good experience for that child, because it's difficult for any family to have a student not be a good match for a school. I personally think it's about the match. I think there's certain schools, I mean, you know, it's about having choices. This woman was fortunate enough to live in a community that invests heavily in its public schools.
Right.
And she had the option to sort of travel back and forth and have some choices.
Check it out. Mm-hmm.
I think for me, from a social policy point of view, I am personally much more interested in families that don't have those choices in large urban districts or poor rural areas that have kind of exhausted their options within the district and are sort of desperate to look for an improvement.
And yet, ideally, the deal was that this would work for everybody, no matter what kind of community you lived in. This would put the pressure on to improve all schools.
Well, and I think there's many examples, I know certainly in Boston, that the existence of the charter schools has helped prompt innovation within the district school. And I think in terms of them creating the pilot schools as a response to the, you know, so-called competition from
right.
the charter schools.
Right.
So I think that it's certainly caused a rethinking, a refocusing on the part of the district educators, which I think is healthy. I think, you know, the underlying thing here is that, yes, we have we have great challenges and problems in terms of educating our youth to a much higher standard.
And it seems more important every day with
and
all the economic competition
and
globally.
The thing, in terms of the charter schools, it's important to remember that there's bipartisan, long-term bipartisan support for creating this option.
But there's also a lot of opposition that's always been centered around the issue of resources. Is it going to take, you know, great students or great chunks of money away from traditional public schools?
And here I would say, for me, that is a paper dragon, because to me the resource question is much more in terms of looking at national financing and coming up with an alternative to the inequitable distribution of resources and basing public education on property taxes. So I think that, to me, we're fighting over a half of an apple instead of looking at the whole bushel.
Though you know, a lot of traditional school representatives have taken that half apple very seriously because it's what's there. Diana Jean Shimo, can you paint the picture for us of where this is supposed to be headed in the years just ahead? What kind of growth in the numbers of charter schools and funding toward charter schools is anticipated?
Well, right now, the federal government spends about $218 million. That's what's appropriated for this year for charter schools to help them get started.
And that's the federal piece, but local
that's
funds.
The federal piece. That's just the federal piece, mm-hmm. Exactly. Locally, I don't know what the sort of overall number is nationwide, but I would say that generally what we're expecting is that with No Child Left Behind, we should see many, many more charter schools because this is one of the options for a school that fails to make sufficient progress each year. If they don't make sufficient progress for 5 years running, one of their sort of possibilities is to kind of shut down and reinvent themselves as a charter. The other possibilities are to come under new management from the district or from the state. So they're all pretty sort of dramatic solutions. And charters, I think, will probably figure prominently in that. The other thing that's kind of interesting is under No Child Left Behind, there's this whole question about the size of schools and if you have a certain minimum number of students and have mm-hmm. to be held responsible for progress and so forth. And I suspect that we may, although I have no evidence for this, I just suspect that we may see a sort of proliferation of smaller schools within schools where perhaps the school will not have trouble reaching these performance targets, sort of like the description of the fellow who called before from Milwaukee about the schools in Beloit,
right.
Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
Where these smaller schools will maybe have an easier time meeting the federal law than the larger schools and will be a kind of raft for some kids to continue. But I would expect that just in the last couple of years we've seen a big growth in charter schools, and I think we will probably see a huge growth in the next 10 years, I would say.
I want to try to get to more of our many callers waiting. Jack is calling from Arlington, Massachusetts. Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much. I want to respond to a couple points. I'm a teacher at the Framingham Community Charter School
in
Framingham, Massachusetts. And I think one of the things which Meg has pointed out is that charter schools are an alternative in that they certainly range across the political and educational spectrum. So when we label sort of charter school as one piece, there's a very diverse piece. But in general, if I go back to the generals, that charter schools are smaller schools, which give a great benefit to their community by knowing their students much better. The recent NAEP data, which you all are talking about,
right.
seems to certainly, I guess, doom charter schools in some sense. But also, I question the data itself in that the charter school, knowing students much better, that the assessment of an entire student's experience, going beyond simply this data, but also the effect certainly of Meg's school in the community. And what I would hope is that charter schools provide, I guess, more innovations and to research the processes of education which are working in many charter schools. And so these processes and these innovations which...
So you're in a charter school, you like it, you think you know your students better, but what about the instability that comes with schools opening and closing, students moving from one school to another? Does that get in the way of that intimacy of teacher and student?
I think the most important piece is simply rather than in school starting up as in a small business, there's a real inherent belief in the school and a real desire to get it going. And I think that on the whole, charter schools, you'll see a heart and a soul in a school much more so than in a large system.
Jack, we've got it, and thanks for your call. Richard Rothstein, what about this notion of the kind of pioneering spirit of the charter school? They're determined to find a new frontier, to do things better, that ought to inform, to fuel a better education over time. Do you see that playing out?
Well, as I said earlier, I'm sure there are many charter schools where that pioneering spirit does pervade. the school. There are also many public schools with wonderfully dedicated teachers who do a spectacular job raising children above the level that you'd expect their achievement to be. And we need to look in both places to find good schools, and charters are not the only one. The caller was right to question the data that condemns charter schools. And all day today, charter school proponents have been questioning the data, saying it should have been figured this way or figured that way. They're right to do it, but the problem is that these are the same kinds of data that we use to condemn public schools as failing. And if the data are no good for charter schools, they're probably no good for public schools either.
Good for the goose, good for the gander. And President Bush has been very strong on holding to those testing and scores as the measure.
That's right.
I wondered about that, Diana. Today, you quoted Gene Allen, the president of the Center for Education Reform, represents charter schools in Washington, saying that these results reflect only a point in time. They said nothing about the progress of students in charter schools, sort of the snapshot argument. She said it could only be measured really appropriately by tracking performance in future tests. But as you report, the National Assessment Governing Board has no plans to survey charter schools again in this way. I couldn't believe that. What's that about?
Well, this was a pilot study, so it's a one-time deal.
Yeah, but is that ducking accountability on a national scale? Isn't that what that amounts to? Shouldn't we be comparing charter and traditional public schools?
Well, I just actually got off the phone with the head of the National Assessment Governing Board posing pretty much that same question. His name is Darv Winnick, and his feeling was that there perhaps are not enough charter schools, and I sort of raised the question, well, you have here a nationally representative sample, but his feeling was perhaps there are not enough charter schools and that we should wait. And he said, I'm aware that this can be seen as kind of sour grapes because we're not, you know, happy with the results, because these were not great results for charter schools, but I still think that we need a larger sample, and, you know, we need to give them more time. Many of these schools are in their infancy. It's not sort of fair to compare them. And I share Richard's sort of reaction to some of these statements, because I think there are many of them very valid points. You know, charter schools can often serve very difficult populations. They're located in inner cities and so forth. But he is right that we do see the same thing with public schools, and I've never seen somebody sort of do a hierarchical linear analysis, which is a very complicated, sophisticated thing that they're planning to do to release the charter school results. I've never seen them take a look at the public school results and say, well, let's look at who's in these schools and see if that can explain what's going on.
It's not done there. Meg Campbell, how about it? You've stood up all this hour for testing and for charter schools, all schools, to be held to the significance of their test scores. This notion of not testing charter schools because there's too few, they're too young, they're not ready yet for national testing in comparison. Do you buy it?
Well, I don't want to say that I've spent the hour standing up for testing because I
well,
certainly agree with the caller.
Well, but for schools that don't succeed, being closed.
Well, I think it's on a range of measures, and this is one of the measures. I think that it's taking a comprehensive view of the school, including student performance. I think the caller, Jack, who called in his point about looking at students more comprehensively. Yes, I agree with Mr. Rothstein's comment that, you know, public school, I don't see public, you know, public district schools are not the enemy. You know, we are allies together in educating the students, the children of our country.
Maybe, but, though it's often not
well,
seen that way.
I know
way,
it's
as you
often
know.
Not seen that way, but certainly in terms of educator to educator.
Right.
At the ground level.
The mission's the same.
Well, and that the truth of the matter is that we and many charter schools do have an opportunity to be innovative in ways that, having been myself in a district schools, was never allowed to be.
Well, sooner or later, that testing will be there for everybody under this new regime. And these new scores, a lot to think about on the charter school front, and I'm sure that will happen. Meg Campbell, Diana Jean Shemmel, Richard Rothstein, thanks to each of you for being with us tonight. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.